Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. Join us each week as we delve into some of life's most complex questions. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at hazyradio.com, and welcome. Karen, how are you?
I'm well, Rick. How about you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. You know, a lot of exciting stuff that's going on lately. That's right. Yeah. Before we get to all that, let's cover the contest, you know, with the whole phrase it pays and everything.
Okay, so yes. Last month's contest winner was Whitney Pound, and I will be sending her stuff soon.
Yay, Whitney!
Yay! That's right. Thanks everybody for playing. Do not despair. We have a new contest this month. And this month's prize is 3 digital issues of Paranormal Underground magazine. They're typically, are they $1.99, Cheryl?
They are.
Okay.
The digital
so
issues.
So typically they're $1.99, so it's a whole $6 value. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and actually we'll have 5 winners. So
well, that's right.
We'll have 5 winners. but let me tell you, it may only be valued at $1.99, but it's worth far more than that.
Far more than that.
Yes, because you get pure genius in 3 separate issues.
So. That's right. So 5 of you will win. Here's what you need to do. You need to email the name of your favorite cryptid. It can be any cryptid you like. It can be Bat Squatch. It can be Bigfoot. Or, you know, any of the others, email the name of your favorite cryptid to editor@paranormalunderground.net. You'll be entered to win, and at the end of the month, on the 31st, Cheryl will draw 3 names from the contest entries. And
we're going to do 5 names?
5 names. Mm. Hello. Yeah, that. So anyway, it will be very good. Now, see, this is my first night talking about the new contest, which is why I sound like this. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and if you win and you already have a 12-month digital subscription to the magazine, we're going to go ahead and let you pick out 3 past issues. So you'll get something. You'll get some magazines.
You'll get some magazines. And, hey, it's a good magazine. And we have a new issue coming out here.
I was going to say.
The May issue is coming out real soon.
It's fantastic.
Now,
May issue?
Coming soon.
Fantastic. Now, my favorite cryptid is the Mexican staring frog of southern Sri Lanka.
Of course.
Say what?
That's mine.
I don't have a favorite
They talk about
them
on
cryptid.
South Park, you know. So
They
yeah.
do. Yeah, yeah, they do. Man, Bear, Pig, I think, is my favorite cryptid.
Yeah, Al Gore flying around with a cape. That was like one of the best episodes. Man, Bear Pig, I told you he was real.
Or maybe Mecha Streisand. I could play the South Park stuff all night.
Heck yes.
So anyway, get those entries emailed. You currently have 29 days to do it, so this is a good time to get started. Send them in. You'll get 3 of the issues, and they're well worth it.
Yeah.
Because fantastic people write for Paranormal Underground, such as our guest tonight. And who have can you tell our listeners who they have won this evening, Rick?
Well, tonight we have Michelle Arand, and she is our very own Silver Moon Medicine. Michelle is a symbiotic medicine woman. Now, I've never heard that term before, so I cannot wait to find out what a symbiotic medicine woman is. And also, we're going to be talking about herbology, real vampires. I'm liking this one. As long as they're not, you know, glittery pimple-faced pretty boys, I'm okay with that. And we're also going to find out what the difference is between a dark and a light worker. I think I pretty much have an idea of what it is, but, you know, find it out in a little bit more detail.
Learning is going to take place.
Yes, learning will be taking place tonight. And I'm really excited about speaking about these subjects because it's not often that we talk about the more magical type stuff on the show, you know, magical practitioners and, you know, metaphysical. And I really dig the whole metaphysics side. Right.
I do, too. And as a matter of fact, what's really funny is that before I was before I ever did any of the paranormal research and the afterlife research, mm-hmm. I was always I've studied metaphysical stuff for years.
Sure.
You know, and researched it and looked into it. So that actually is what led me into the, you know, the paranormal stuff. Was I always approached it from the metaphysical side, and I still do. And I think that we sometimes, as paranormal investigators, we forget just how important the metaphysical side can be in the research we do.
Okay, now Elaine from Whoopi in the chat room has just said, no Twilight for Rick, note to self, send Rick glitter. Now, okay, I'm just going to tell you something right now, Elaine. Glitter there will throw me into a rage. It gets everywhere, and I can't get rid of it. Oh, God, yeah. No, but glitter, yeah, please. No, Elaine, don't send me anything.
Send him some glitter, and then have Jamie take pictures, and we can see Rick in his rage. I think it sounds like a good time.
Yeah, can't wait. But, you were talking about, you know, how in the paranormal field right now that it's, you know, science, and they, you know, that the metaphysical side and the psychics, it's not scientific. Well, actually, it is, and this is the way things were done before the television shows came on. We used mediums, clairvoyance, clairsentience, clairaudience, psychics in general. And, you know, if you want to make the complete approach to paranormal research and investigation, you need to also check into the metaphysical side as well. It's not as, like, weird and freaky and flaky as what people may think.
That's right. Hey, and before we go to break, I have to apologize to our listeners for my whistling nose. It is full-on springtime here in the Pacific Northwest, and I am a walking allergy right now. My nose is constantly stuffed up or whistling. My eyes are watering. So I'm sorry that you probably have had to listen to me whistle through the last few shows, and, well, it's not going to be any different tonight. So I'm just going to apologize for that in advance.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you got, like, the whole sexy cold voice thing going on for you, too. Yeah.
It's my sexy phlegm voice. That's right. That's right. The last time my voice sounded like this was when I injured myself doing the Bigfoot call.
Obviously, here in Illinois, we don't get to do, the Bigfoot call. I live, 30 miles north of the city of Chicago. So it's like we don't really have, like, big feet. Is that how you... is that how you say it? Bigfoot, big feet? I don't know. I've been studying cryptozoology for like 25 years, and it's like I never could come to that.
Sasquatches.
Yeah, we don't really have too much call for bellowing like an ape in the middle of the night. So,
well, again, I was goofing off.
Yeah, right. But you'll never do that again, huh?
No, I wasn't actually trying to call Bigfoot. I was trying to demonstrate something that somebody had told me they heard.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that was a long time ago. Anyway, so let's do this. Let's go to break. We will get Michaela on the phone. And when we come back, we're going to be having some fascinating conversations. So stick around. It's Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network.
Hi, this is Cheryl Knight, editor for Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Chad Wilson, Paranormal Underground Magazine's publisher. Every month, Paranormal Underground Magazine explores the unexplained by examining topics that range from haunted sites to ufology to cryptozoology. We also spotlight investigators and researchers who continue to pave the way in a field that seeks to answer some of life's most complex questions.
If you want to read about topics like psychic phenomena, demonology, conspiracy theories, crystals and herbology, and much, much more, visit ParanormalUnderground.net and start exploring the unexplained today. Visit us today at ParanormalUnderground.net and get a 12-month digital subscription for 15% off the cover price.
Hey everyone, it's Karen Frazier. I'm here with my co-host of Paranormal Underground Radio, Rick Hale.
Hi everyone.
We invite you to join Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network to explore the unexplained every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific and other times in the flyover states.
Each week, we talk with investigators in the field, researchers, authors, and experts about topics that include paranormal investigation, ufology, cryptozoology, and spirituality.
So, please join us each Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern for Paranormal Talk with great guests right here on HazyRadioNetwork.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hey, this is Karen Frazier, writer and radio host with Paranormal Underground. Since I wrote my book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington in 2010, people have asked me what happened next. In my new book, Dancing with the Afterlife, a paranormal memoir, my Wellington story continues. Dancing with the Afterlife is more than the continuation of the Wellington story, however. It's also the story of a lifetime of afterlife research and paranormal encounters. What I've learned has changed my life, and it might change yours as well. To learn more about Dancing with the Afterlife or to read an excerpt from the book, visit dancingwiththeafterlife.com. Thank you.
Hi, this is Hazy, and you're listening to the Hazy Radio Network.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Hazy Radio Network, its affiliates, or sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for sticking around. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick, and this is Paranormal Underground Radio at hazyradio.com. Joining us tonight is going to be Paranormal Underground's very own Silver Moon Medicine, Michael Arand. Michael Arand is, or Micah, we'll call her. She's a symbiotic medicine woman. Cannot wait to find out what that is. We're also going to be talking about vampires, herbology, dark and light workers tonight. Micah, welcome to the underground.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So, okay, now I have just, I want to start this off with, what exactly is a symbiotic medicine woman?
So, a symbiotic medicine woman, the reason why I chose that label or title is because I've searched a long 48 years to figure out exactly what am I and what do I do. And I have a very shamanic type of energy that I resonate. And
you do. I know Michaela, and I can, yes, you do.
Yeah.
And because of that, and growing up through, we say metaphysics, but learning the spiritual part of life, I found that I am definitely somebody, when I say symbiotic, I'm giving and exchanging. And a lot of that comes from the psychic vampirism part that I feel, that hybrid piece of me. And then the medicine woman is, because I don't really feel as though I'm a shaman per se, because there's things that in true shamanism I am not able to do. But in medicine work, like a medicine woman, I am able to do those things with the herbs and the crystals and the healing of the people. And so I kind of combine those, all three of those terms together to create the symbiotic medicine woman.
Okay.
It fits me very well.
It does fit you very well. And my first exposure to Michaela was we were having a meeting and she came along because Patty wanted her to teach us about crystals and stones. And so I had a stone on me and I don't even remember what it was now, but I handed it to her and she pretty much told me lots of very true things about myself just from touching the stone. So that's one of the things that you do, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh. Absolutely. So
can you explain that?
It's because I have this amazing ability, or even a deficit at times, to be able to read and hear your soul talking. I can hear a person's soul talking to me while, even if I am not interacting with that person. And so it's like our souls are exchanging information during that time. And so when I have something from someone or standing close to them, their soul is usually talking through me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And so do you think that that's how most people receive psychic energy, but you just have been able to label it that way? Or is it something that's unique to you?
I don't know if it's the way everybody perceives it. I mean, I think we all perceive things on different levels. Some can hear, some can see colors, some have can feel feelings. So I do think other people can do different things. Do I think I'm the only one on the planet that's able to do what I can do? No, I don't think so. I'm sure there's others out there that can do the same things that, or do the same things I do. I think a lot of them might. It's very challenging to not get this very confused with a schizophrenia or another type of mental health label. And I've done my gambit with that. So I do think there may even be other people out there that are being medicated or over-medicated to kind of shut that off because they haven't learned how to work with it instead of against it.
Right.
Well, that makes total sense to me. And, you know, I do think that a lot of people are labeled as mentally ill when they may just not understand abilities that they have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it does a greater disservice for people to suppress another person's ability. Like in my family, for example, it was completely unacceptable to say, you know what, I feel a presence in the room or I just saw something. They didn't like it. So they suppressed me. And I think that you do a lot more damage to somebody rather than just letting them be themselves.
Absolutely. I do this big hype about labels. And, you know, we have labels for a reason. They're to help us find our way and our path of who we are. Mm-hmm. And when you accept a label for yourself, you know, paranormal investigator or symbiotic psychic vampire or whatever label you fit, you have to be willing to have that label and use it the way it is to help you grow. I don't know if that makes sense. But
it does.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So we actually have a question from Teresa in chat. And this is actually a question I have too, because I experience exactly what she's talking about. Do you think that some people and some stones or minerals don't get along? For instance, she says she can't handle hematite. I also can't handle hematite when I wear lapis and I wear it with like a magnetic clasp. If the magnetic clasp always releases if I'm wearing lapis.
Absolutely. There are stones that cannot work well with people. And one of the things is that with that stone, the hematite, for sure, anybody who is magical or does a lot of spiritual, their aura does spiritual traveling. And I mean that you can even do spiritual traveling while you're awake in a kind of a daydream like state. That stone is meant to ground you. It's meant to hold your soul to this earth plane. And if your spirit is a naturally free-flowing energy tent, that can sometimes really be hard for people to wear. I cannot wear hematite. I only wear hematite when I want to suppress my energy.
Hmm. So if I wanted to, so it suppresses your energy, but it doesn't necessarily block out other people. So it's not a protective stone then, it's a grounding stone.
Correct, yes.
Okay, got it. So go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, some people do use it for protection. Black stones are known to help protect people. And so if a person resonates with hematite, meaning that it works well with them, they could use that stone as a protective stone because it would help ground them tighter onto the physical plane that they're at. And then that sometimes that security gives that person the idea that they are secure and protected. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Rob wants to know if certain stones are a better match for certain people. So would a blue stone possibly be better for him than a red stone?
So the interesting thing is in the next May magazine, I actually wrote a crystal piece on understanding how stones work. And that is one of the questions that I kind of talk about. So you can use any stones you want. Usually the stones are drawn to you by what you have going on within your chakra orders in your body. So let's say your root chakra, which is your lowest chakra, it's the red chakra, is fine and nothing's going on with it. You might not be drawn to a red stone, even though you like it. You might not be spiritually drawn to it because you don't need it during that time. You might be drawn this another color of a stone that is what you really need. Your spirit is actually needing for whatever you're doing purpose-wise, life purpose-wise.
Right.
I don't always want to say, does that make sense? But
no, it does make sense. And it's because I have a friend of mine who is, you know, very much like yourself, and I've worked with her quite a bit. And I can personally with me, I can never find stones that I like. I you know, it's just I have a bag, but it's like I don't know what it is. It's like I just don't feel like I can bond with them. I mean, is that kind of like a common thing?
Yeah, that's a common thing. Usually that happens because for me, you must be a very kind of skeptical person, very looking at all the little interesting pieces to certain things. And so sometimes you might not be drawn to stones because that might not be your way of healing or your body's way of healing. There's ways to open that up if you wanted to open that up, but
actually I do, because that's so funny that you call me a skeptic. I don't think anybody's ever called me a skeptic before, but no, it's like, it's not that I'm skeptical. I'm just one of those, I'm a believer that hasn't turned their brain off. I think that that's the best way to kind of, you know.
I understand. Actually, Rick and I are both very much the same way, even though, I mean, and you know some of the stuff that I've gone through with my abilities, Michaela. So, and even with all of the things that I've had that have been very confirming, I still am very skeptical of it.
Right. And that's, you know, I think that's normal. I think that is part of the, I would say, the level of soul work that you're at. And sometimes those things just aren't what you're needing to follow along on your spiritual life path. Sometimes stones work, sometimes stones don't. Some people need things like herbs, or they need music, or they need hands-on work. It just depends on where you are in on that spiritual path and what's going to actually move you forward. So not always do people pick up stones and say, yeah, and then they start on their spiritual journey.
Right. But how do people figure it out? Because you just said something that's really interesting to me. So you said somebody may need sound work, or I don't think you used sound, but, you know, or some people may need colors or stones. Or how do you figure that out? Do you just sort of go to what draws you, or is there somebody that can help you find those types of things?
So that's kind of like what I do with people. I usually meet people who are, I call them stone cold. They've been swimming in the sea of lost souls, and they want to know how to get started on their spiritual path. So I always start people out with numerous different things. I start them out with a small bag of stones. I always have them. One of the biggest things I like people to do is I have them put a piece of amethyst underneath their tongue while they take a Epsom salt bath. And that is one way of bringing all the energy in and kind of opening your mind up.
Oh, I know what I'm doing tonight. Oh.
And it will connect you with the spiritual consciousness that is way above us. So that's the first thing that I have people do. I also have you carry a rose quartz, a quartz crystal, and that amethyst around with you for a little while. The other thing that I talk to the person about is asking them, you know, what kind of things interest them, and finding that. So like herbs might interest some people. Maybe it's candle burning. Maybe it is, I'm drawing a blank, but, all those little different pieces for them to kind of put it together to figure out where what helps them.
Sure. Well, I know one of the things that works for me very well are the binaural beats.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, and the other thing is the salt baths are really phenomenal for me, although I've never done it with an amethyst under my tongue. So I'll have to try that. We have some questions from chat.
Okay.
So Elaine says that when she picks up certain crystals, they vibrate. She can feel them vibrate. What's that all about? Is that normal?
Yes, that's normal. That is when the stones are actually speaking to your soul. Those are the stones that you want to kind of, those are the stones that you want to keep with you, either in your environment or in your pocket. Those are the ones that are speaking to you. So when you do find a stone that speaks to you, even if it's just a pebble on the street, I mean, it doesn't have to be a fancy, pretty, cool stone to resonate a vibration. You put your hand over it, and if you feel that, maybe you might feel warm. It might feel tingly. You might change. Your mood might change. You might feel a pressure or something different. So those are the stones that you want to kind of hold for a little while and resonate with. That's what that stone's doing with you at that time. It's resonating with you. It's talking to you. It's adjusting your body's vibration to match its vibration so you, your soul, and that stone can work together.
Okay.
Now, I have a quick question. Where exactly do these stones get their power from? Is this like an ancient power that's, you know, left over from the Big Bang, or is it something that has happened over time?
I think it's things that are happening over time, to be honest. Now, I'm no scientist when it comes to that kind of stuff, but I do know I do know that there are stones out there, especially nowadays. So I started my big stone journey in the and got really into it in the early 80s. And mind you, there were not quartz crystals laying around and you could walk into any store and buy them. They were not there like you can now. Those stones and I lost track.
That's okay.
Tell me your question again, Rick.
The question was, is this an ancient power that goes back to the Big Bang? I personally think that that's like where the dark demonic type of power comes from. But do you think that power can also be good? I switched the question up a little bit. But is this where the stones get that? It's kind of like the good side, the yin and the yang.
Yeah, I do think they have a yin and a yang in each stone. No matter what, everything has a balance. Mm-hmm. Your first question was, do I feel like it came from something? I do feel that stones are still evolving. If you looked at stones from the past, like for instance, quartz crystal used to really just be like this little activator kind of stone. It wasn't anything of big power. And now if you look at a quartz crystal or carry a quartz crystal around, the vibration in that stone is changed. It's a higher vibration. And I think as our planet continues to evolve, so will the stones continue to evolve because they're growing right from the planet. So sure. I think... Yeah. And you can, if you're reading in books like stone healing books, you'll see if you look in the old books like from the 80s or earlier, the descriptions of each stone may be very different than some of the newer stones that they have now. So we're even finding, I guess they're even finding new stones, or they were the old stones and they're kind of changing their name to meet their new vibration.
Right.
Wow.
So okay. Jenny was wants to go back for a minute because you were talking about the amethyst under the tongue. And she says that the amethyst isn't something that resonates with her. So she wants to know, can you substitute stones for stones?
You can, absolutely. So I would say to Jenny for her to pick the stone that feels most powerful to her that she owns and take a bath with it. Especially if it's a purple stone or a blue stone. Blue stones tend to work very well, like blue holly, chalcedony. Those stones work real well in bath type, rituals. But so she could use any stone, even if it wasn't a blue or purple one. It's because in that tub with that salt, all that energy is more confined. It's an extra power boost, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Great. So, you know that I do a lot of work with the gemstone beads because I make the jewelry and I make the prayer beads and things. And before I send anything that I make to somebody, I actually do a little sage over it to remove my energy. Is there something, if somebody gets stones from somewhere else, if they buy a necklace, if they, buy a stone in a store, do they need to do anything to make that stone their own?
Yes. First thing is I don't believe stones transfer negative energy. You will meet other people who say that a stone has had a bad spell put on it and all those kind of things. Number one, anything that you want to believe, you're going to believe no matter what. So that's my little piece on that. It's what you believe. It's what comes from your intention, your insides that makes that stone powerful. It's your soul and your stone. If that stone is making you have a negative feeling or uncomfortable, there could be for two reasons. One, that stone doesn't resonate with you right now, and it's not ready for you. So chances are you'll lose it if you buy it, or it'll disappear somehow for some strange reason. It might have something like that.
I had a whole bag of stones disappear. It was the darndest thing. It was shortly after I first met you, I think, and we were talking about different stones. And so I had some. I just had them in the little bag that, I keep it. I keep my bag of rocks in my bra. It's my where I keep them. Anyway,
good
so
place.
I can whip them out.
That's a good place.
Patty always says, "Yeah, pull out your stones, show everybody where you keep them." So I always whip them out of my bra. But anyway. But I was going somewhere where I knew there was going to be like this massive amount of energy, and I tend to be empathic, and so I feel like I really need to protect myself against that energy. So I set this bag of rocks down. I went into the kitchen. I came back, and that bag was gone, and I have never seen it since.
Wow.
So does that mean it just, I wasn't supposed to have them?
Correct. That's what I call that a confirmation, is that tells me that you didn't need those stones to continue on with your journey, and that those, trust me, if those stones are meant to be with you, they will show up again, maybe in a different form. I have a red piece of jasper that has tan jasper running through it, and I love that stone. I've used it many, many times for root chakra work, and one day I thought my grandson had taken it outside and had lost it, so I scoured all over looking for my lovely lost rock. Well, I didn't find it until about 6 months later when it showed up. Now, what occurred during that time is I had been on this path of not wanting to find a relationship, not wanting to find a relationship, and so that stone disappeared. While that stone was gone, in walks this relationship for me. Mm-hmm. So, and then the more ironic piece to that was that when I was moving to go live with this person, lo and behold, she picks it up and brings it to me and says, "Oh, I found one of your stones. It was on the floor." And I thought, wow, how confirming is that to me, that that stone needed to go away for a little while so I would lower my expectations or raise my expectations or allow this spirit to come into my world, because I was using that stone as a shield to keep that part of my soul from being open. So that's what I'm talking about when I talk about working with stones.
Okay. So if I never see that bag of stones again, it means that I don't need them.
You don't need them. Now, you may find another stone that was in that bag. So let's say you had a piece of lapis in there that you really loved, and you'll go out and maybe and purchase a new lapis piece. Well, then that's fine. If that stone disappears again or doesn't seem to resonate with you, you would know as a confirmation that you don't need that stone right now.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. It makes total sense. So we have a couple more chat questions.
Okay.
Did you want to finish your thought? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay.
So I'm thinking about actually Rick's question from the past about if stones have the dark or the light in them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And can I elaborate on that real quick?
Yeah, please do.
Please do it.
As I said, I don't believe that stones carry negative energy. Why would something made of the earth give you something negative? What the stone would do, if in a negative sense, is that it may be having you work on hard topics that you have been reluctant to want to work on. So let's say, for instance, like I said, I didn't want to have a relationship, so I kept this stone as a shield. And then somebody might have seen that as a negative thing if they were open to wanting a relationship. And so they would have tended not to be drawn to that stone. And so that's the negative part I think people get. And I've read lots of things out there that people say, you know, oh, I get a bad feeling from them. Well, that's because that stone either is not resonating with you at that time, or that stone is going to have you do some heavy duty internal spiritual cleaning, like cleaning out that closet of some of that baggage that somebody gave you along the way, or you picked up about yourself, another label or a shame or a guilt that you don't want to work on. That might be another reason why that stone is really hard for you to hold on to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
That does. I do have one quick question before we get to the questions of chat. Sorry. Now, the stones, obviously they just don't get up and walk away on their own. Obviously, we don't live in a cartoon, but who is taking the stones? Is it
where
your,
do they go?
Where do they go? Who takes them?
Where did my stones go?
I don't know where your I don't know where the stones go. I just know many people have told me my stone just up and disappeared, and I don't know. You guys are the ghost people.
I have honestly, I have turned over. I have looked in every drawer, under everything. I have turned over every piece of furniture. Those stones are gone.
And I couldn't tell you where they've gone to. I mean, I've never seen any spirit walk up and snatch the stone away. Do I believe? I don't know. Does time freeze and an alien come in and walk in and take the stuff? I mean, honestly, it's just something I have no idea where it goes to. I just trust that no matter what, the gods are working with me during that time. Even though by losing the bag, it feels like a loss, and I want to grieve and I want to replace it and I want to go crazy trying to find it, I just have to go back in my mind and trust that all of it was for a purpose. And that's the hardest part of the whole lesson.
Yeah, isn't it though?
Mm-hmm.
So, somebody wants to know, because we're going back to the bathtub and the amethyst again. What can you do if you don't have a bathtub?
Oh, you could do the same thing in a shower if you wanted to and use some kind of, it's the water that creates that higher energy level. And then you could still use like a Epsom salt scrub of some sort that you buy or make of your own and do the same kind of situation. Or you could go to a lake where Mother Nature is naturally and float in the water with that under your tongue. You can improvise. I mean, there's things that are not so solid in stone. It's what kind of resonates with you, if that makes sense.
It does.
You could have your feet in the ocean if you live close to it and hold it under your tongue. You don't have to be fully immersed. So.
Oh, see, I would go stand in the ocean with something under my tongue. I love it there. Anyway, okay, so Rob wants to know, is there a stone that's good for beginners, or can one get a stone that's just too powerful for one person?
The stones that I think are for beginners are quartz crystals, rose quartz, and amethyst. Amethyst opens up your third eye. It's one of the best third eye openers. The quartz crystal helps open up your mind to the consciousness above us and everything around us. And then the rose quartz is for learning self-love, because I believe that no matter what you want to know about love, the most important piece is our own self-love. Without that, we are not able to really fully love anything or anybody until we know all of that. But that's just my belief.
Absolutely.
I like that. Yeah,
I do too. I had a follow up and now I've lost it.
I've done that a few times.
Isn't that funny? It was, I know. Okay, I got it. So somebody like me who's really started to come into their own as far as psychic abilities that I'm now using in my paranormal research. Are there stones that can enhance abilities? Are there stones people can work with where if they feel like they might have something, but they're not sure that it can help them?
Yeah, I think that would go along. Okay, so stones, all of them have a vibration. So like I talked about red jasper, turquoise, rose quartz. A lot of those stones have a lower vibration. So most all of us are vibrating at a lower vibration, and that's why we would be attracted to them. As we grow spiritually, our frequency of our body rises, and that frequency is what you would be looking to kind of tap into. So you would be looking for stones like the newer, what we call the new ascension stones. Diatase is one of them. Phenacite is one of them. Gosh, some of the other ones are escaping my name. But there are like 12 new stones out there that are the higher vibrational piece for people who are starting to what I call ascend. You're starting to spiritually continue to grow to this new conscious level that we're looking for people to get to. And I think that those kind of stones would help.
Okay. So they're called ascension stones?
Ascension stones, yeah.
So if somebody were to Google ascension stones, they would find out what those were?
Absolutely.
Very good.
And I can put those on my Facebook.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. Definitely. Yeah. So I know Rick is dying to ask about some of the dark worker and vampire stuff, but we got so much interest in the stone stuff that we kind of, I told Cheryl, I think we're probably going to need to have you come back because there's no way we're getting through everything tonight.
No, I mean, you know what? And it's funny too, because it's like, I do want to touch on those things after, you know, after we take our break at the top of the hour, but I got to tell you, Micah, I'm learning a lot because I am not as proficient in this area as I, you know, in like, you know, psychic abilities or whatever. I got to tell you, thank you so much, because it's like I really am learning quite a bit here.
Well, good. That's good.
We have another chat question.
Okay.
Can stones help with physical health?
Absolutely, they can. Yes, and so depends on what the physical ailment is and the person. So it's hard for me to diagnose somebody like over the air like we're doing right now. Distance is not one of my specialties. I'm better at that in person. When I diagnose somebody, I use a rattle and I shake it all around their whole soul so I can figure out exactly where your spirit is blocked or torn or has scar tissue on it. That can tell me what type of stone you may need. The other thing I do is I lay out like 75 healing stones in front of people, and then I have them choose the stones that are calling to them, because then their soul starts really speaking to me heavy at what is actually physically or emotionally going on with that person. So yes, you can use stones for physical ailments depending on what that is. There's a book written by a woman named Diane Stein, and it is a healing manual. She is the person who really I started learning information from and took off from her piece of laying on the hands and the stones and all that kind of stuff. She's definitely a root worker medicine woman. Mm-hmm. And that is a good place to look for references.
Well, I know that Carolyn Meese talks about, you know, in Anatomy of the Spirit, and she has a couple books like that where she talks about that health issues are related to chakra issues. And so, like chakra blockages, for instance, if you don't speak your truth, you may have a blockage in your throat chakra. Absolutely. And so then would... If you can trace a health issue back to a chakra issue and an emotional issue, can you then choose a stone of that color to remove the blockage?
Yes, you can. Absolutely. Yeah. You can. Okay. That would then give you an idea of, and kind of what will be in the next magazine piece that I wrote about, is that you might ironically think that, let's say you think it's your third chakra, which is a yellow stone. That's your will chakra. And you may find that where you think that that's where it's messed up at, you might only be drawn to these pink stones all the time when you think it should be yellow. But what's really it's talking about then, it's talking about that your pink chakra, which is your heart chakra, it's pink or green color. It's just telling you that you're working on, your spirit is working on something in that area of the body.
Mm-hmm.
To be able, and you'll need to work on that piece first before that part of your chakra will open up completely, which would be your yellow chakra I was talking
okay.
about.
Okay. So, yeah, but okay. So the stones do this, the stones don't do the healing. You have to do some personal work along with that. Is that right?
I do think you have to, I think they kind of force you to do the personal, okay. the work. When you carry them around, you're asking the gods to give you the opportunities to tune in with these stones. And so I think that destiny sets us up for those things. I mean, yes, we have control over some of it, but the other part of it we don't have control over. So I believe that when you have a stone that's like that red jasper piece, that I was unwilling to do no matter what, and then all of a sudden it disappears, and then poof, 6 months later, that person during that time walks in. I mean, it was totally against everything I was even thinking about. So,
sure.
Right.
Are there stones that don't get along?
Are there stones that don't get along? You know, I've never met any stones that don't get along. Yes, you will have issues with magnetic ones. So hematite is a magnetic stone. And when you put it with a magnet, it may not want to stick together with that one. It may repel.
Right.
Some people may try to combine stones together because, ooh, that one looks pretty, and ooh, that one looks pretty. But maybe one part of the pretty stone, the second pretty stone, you might not need all of that yet. You might have to first get part of your spiritual lesson to accept a piece of you or something emotional that you might be working on before that next stone will come in and then be able to work right alongside that stone.
Well, I find that when I'm working with stones, I'm very, I go through spurts. So, like, for a while, all I wanted to work with was labradorite.
Yeah, labradorite. Mm-hmm.
And you know, for a while it was amber, and so I find that for me, I'm like become obsessed with the certain stones to work with for a while. I don't know if that's a creative choice or if you know, but I usually follow that.
And that's what you want to do. So, like, labradorite helps you open your mind spiritually. It helps you open up to all the possibilities that are out in front of you. And so, kind of, when I met you, labradorite was one of the stones that we were kind of talking about. And so, at that point in time when I met you, you were working on that. You were starting to want to broaden your horizons and look at metaphysics in a much different light. Mm-hmm. And then if you bring in amber in behind that, amber brings you in to your past life, old history is what it does. It takes you back into your etheric records and goes back into places to relook at things that you were made bad choices over or good choices over. It just depends on the person. But that's what that stone helps you do. So
made total sense of something for me.
That's the reason why you did that. Use those stones in that pattern for those amount of time frames. You have to trust that the stone will only stay in work with you during that time is that it's needed. And then if you won't let it go, it'll do things like break, like you said, disappear where you can never find it.
Yeah. I mean,
it's amazing. You'll drop it somewhere and you won't be able to find it. So...
Well, that's, you know, you can get too attached to something and that becomes your, it becomes the work for you instead of what you should be doing, if that makes any sense. I just think you can, it's too easy to become attached to something as this is the thing that's going to save me. And once you get attached to that, you stop moving forward.
Well, or when it feels really good and things start to seem to make sense and line up, you know, we're creatures of habit. We want it to stay comfortable. We want it to stay right on. We don't want to change that. But then what happens is to me that the gods come in and say, whoop, there goes the carpet. And now you're going to have to deal with it. So you can only really honestly hold on to it and work with it for as long as it's the pattern of the destiny and the emotional growth and spiritual growth that you're needed.
Okay, I have one more question for chat and then we'll go to break. Rob wants to know, what is the easiest stone to work with?
The easiest stone. Let's see, Rob, what would be the easiest stone? I guess it would depend on what you're wanting to work on. If you know, if you're just cold, first time coming into it, never really knew much about stones and want to kind of take off, labradorite, a spectralite is a great stone to use. Tourmalines are really good stones to use, like a green tourmaline for your heart chakra. Everybody can always use work on that. Ambers are nice stones to use right off the bat because it helps you work on your old archives, bring some of your past life stuff in front of you so you could be able to work through that again and get what I call unstuck. Hopefully that answers his questions. I don't know him very well, so it'd be hard for me to tell him what kind of stones.
Well, I will tell you this is that I think he's at the beginning of starting to look into some of his abilities.
Nice.
Yeah. So those stones still hold.
I would say if you feel like you're past the point of amethyst, rose quartz, and quartz crystal, that those just really, you know, you don't really feel like you've, maybe you've already worked through that stuff, and I can't tell that. But like I say, spectralite, labradorite is a great stone to work with. Also, blue kunzite, that's a great stone to work with. Now, if you're a warrior type of soul, you would want to work with turquoise, chrysoprase. If you're somebody that's very emotional and has a real hard time dealing with sorting out other people's emotions from your emotions.
Yeah, that'd be me.
Peridot is a really great stone.
That's oh my God, you know what? I've been totally obsessed with peridot, and that's what I've been working with lately. How funny.
That stone really helps you work with your emotional boundaries, your emotional baggage that you brought into this lifetime. It helps you clear some of that kind of stuff out. And that's a heart chakra stone. Yeah. But now, mind you, like I say, chakras they move around. I know you always see those great pictures where they're spinning in those same perfect little spots. But that force is a big force around your body through that whole space. So there's one spot on everybody that's kind of, it's on their left-hand side. It's where, just underneath their rib cage. It's what we call, and I call, the vomit chakra. It's a spot on our soul where we tend to stuff things down into. If somebody's said negative things to us in the past, or hurt our feelings, or we've even thought negative things about ourselves, and we keep repeating that, we may place that down in that spot of our body to, you know, so that way it's the label that we put down in there, and that can cause us problems in the future on any kind of personal work that we need to do on our paths. So something that I always work on diagnosing first thing right off the bat is, how big is that spot?
Yeah, really. I think mine's probably pretty big. We need to take a break.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll go into the vampirism and the dark work. The dark work, is it dark workers? Is that right?
Dark workers, like light workers. We all know what a light worker is.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, we'll do that when we come back from break. So stick around, you guys. It's Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Geddy Lee for RAD. To many of us, drunk driving is something that other people do. Certainly not one of our friends or relatives would do such a thing. When you see someone who's had too much to drink, about to get into a car, urge them to give up the keys and find alternate transportation. Always choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives. You should, too.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, so why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
Hi, this is Cheryl Knight, editor for Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Chad Wilson, Paranormal Underground Magazine's publisher. Every month, Paranormal Underground Magazine explores the unexplained by examining topics that range from haunted sites to ufology to cryptozoology. We also spotlight investigators and researchers who continue to pave the way in a field that seeks to answer some of life's most complex questions.
If you want to read about topics like psychic phenomena, demonology, conspiracy theories, crystals and herbology, and much, much more, visit ParanormalUnderground.net and start exploring the unexplained today. Visit us today at ParanormalUnderground.net and get a 12-month digital subscription for 15% off the cover price.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi, this is Hazy, and you're listening to the Hazy Radio Network.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at hazyradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. For the last hour, we've been having a fascinating conversations, fascinating conversation concerning stones with Micah Rand, Silver Moon Medicine, symbiotic medicine woman. Sorry, guys, it's really blowing my mind. Thank you for sticking around for another segment, Micah. We really do appreciate it.
Before we go too far, I have a question from somebody who came just as we were concluding the stone portion, and so she wanted to get her question in really quick before we move on. She says that she has bruises and wants to know if there's a stone that can help her with that.
Gosh, I would... I would probably want to look it up, but in general, to wanting to know where the bruises are for one reason, I would want to know that if I don't know if that person's still on or not. Mm-hmm. But just curious as to where that would be. But some of the stones that would work for bruising would be red jasper is a great stone for working on bruising. Carnelian is a good stone that works with bruising. So if you were just wanting to keep the bruises down, it's kind of confusing on the bruising part.
Yeah, I just asked her. So upper leg, upper arm.
Upper leg and upper arm. And, so I'm assuming she would just want to put the stone on there to help ease the pain of the bruise. Then I would say definitely use something like carnelian would be an excellent stone. Red jasper is an excellent stone. Those stones are relatively inexpensive. And so either of those stones would work. But I'm sure there's a much deeper venue of stones. But I don't have my stone books to be able to look something like that up.
Okay, well, thanks. That's great. Okay, so... Dark worker, yes.
Ooh.
I have had the opportunity of working with some light workers in the past, and it's like when you work with them, you can feel that power and that light. But I'm not sure what a dark worker is. What exactly is a dark worker?
So I've been into metaphysics a long time, and when light workers really started to emerge in the early 80s, I mean, they were always there. They just gave a big push to finally come out into the open and be able to do their healing work. And I thought, ooh, this is what I am. I figured it out. I fit in. And I realized, wow, I don't fit in. The concept of a light worker is just it's all about love. Love everything and let it go. But I couldn't figure out how to do that without doing all the interpersonal work that you needed to do within yourself. So right. For me, dark workers are about self-mastery. You would want to learn about yourself first before you really could be out there with this blanket of love to be able to share with the rest of the world. Sure. So I think sometimes dark workers get a bad reputation because of the self-mastery piece. With self-mastery can come snobbery, ego. Mm-hmm. Sure. And if you don't learn how to master that ethically, then you can kind of be a turnoff to people. And that would then kind of put you back into your closet and not really be able to step out there and say, hey, I'm a dark worker. The difference between... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, yeah, I can see that because I was telling... you know, some people about the dark worker thing, and it's like, whoa, that sounds like it's like evil. And it's like, nah, I don't get that from Micah at all. I don't believe that. Do you get that a lot, that people are like, wow, that sounds evil?
Oh, I could say I can tell somebody I'm a dark worker and most people will step back from me about two steps and be like, whoa.
Yeah, like you're a Sith Lord or something, you know, yeah.
Like I'm going to come and suck their soul right out of them. Well, say symbiotic psychic vampire and see how people react to you. You know, labels are meant to... They have a purpose, and it's just sad that we think to the negative automatically in something that we really don't know anything about. And There are plenty of light workers or other very spiritual people out there in the world that have negative reasons and negative intentions as to what their purpose is with their abilities. And so I understand when somebody steps back away from me. You know, to me, that's just a challenge.
Sure. I have to tell you, I had to go home and think about it when you told me about the psychic vampire stuff, because it didn't freak me out, but I had to think about it because it was a switch in a paradigm of what I thought went on in the world. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely.
So, and then I told Rick, I think I always have new questions when I see you, but I have to go back and process them, and then I come up with new ones.
Yeah, she said that she's got to, like, you know, come back after a few days, and it's, you know, but I can honestly see that. I mean, a lot of people, even with, like, psychic vampires, you know, a lot of us are a little bit more familiar with that. But okay, with a psychic vampire, for our listeners who might not be, can we, you know, explain that in some detail and how it differs from, you know, say other vampires,
sparkly teenage vampires,
right?
Pimply face, pretty boys, but yeah,
the glittery kind,
the glittery kind.
So there is a huge culture of vampires out there. There's blood vampires, ones who feed. It all depends. Vampirism is about how you feed your energy or get energy from other people. So I'm not really super skilled in the blood vampires. Not that I'm not interested in them. I am. I don't know a lot of them. They're still very closeted, and you can find information about blood vampires, if you're interested in that, you can find it on, there's groups on Facebook. There are lots of different websites. I just always say caution, you know, in any kind of group that you're going to get into, because you should know something about it a little bit before you just go hopping into it and you find yourself into a situation that might not be a good situation for you.
So don't get dressed up and go hang out at a vampire club is what you're saying.
Well, you can. That's a pretty safe – actually, that's probably a very safe place for you to go because it is an open public situation. I would be more talking about a coven kind of thing
or a
house. Maybe vampires are not in covens. That's witches. Vampires are in houses. And so – you know, just to be careful and maybe know a few or talk to some people in that house before going in and joining them and finding out what you're actually getting into first. And that would be with anything, though, not just vampirism. That's anything.
Right.
So you said when I was somewhere with you and I can't even remember. Oh, it was probably at the pub. And you said there was a gal there and you said she's part vampire, but I don't think she knows it.
Right. And that was probably referring to that person as being more of a psychic vampire.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to say, remember, I can really see souls talking, and their soul will start talking to me as a familiar. And so a lot of times people, I believe vampirism is a lot about energy intake, or energy output. And so with that person in general, I could feel that person's eyes kind of looking deeper into my soul to try to communicate. And that is where I would have came up with that. And that person was more of an energy psychic vampire versus a blood feeding vampire.
Okay. All right. I mean, of course, you know, speaking of vampires is always going to beg the question, are there vampires that are immortal?
I would want to see proof of that. I mean, I personally have not met one, that is immortal or that has been living for, you know, centuries in the same skin that they're in right now. I've not met that person. Do I say it can't happen? I wouldn't say nothing can't happen, just because things have always amazed me. And, but I would probably see those individuals in more of the blood feeding vampires than necessarily in psychic vampires.
Okay.
Okay.
So have explained to me that you're a symbiotic psychic. Am I right? Vampire?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. A symbiotic psychic vampire. Yes. I'm a hybrid.
Okay. So explain that.
Okay. So there's blood vampires. They feed off blood of donors and in that kind of situation. There's psychic vampires that feed off your life force. Those are the people who can make you feel like you've spent a little time with them and you're drained, maybe, and don't know why you're drained. They don't always have to touch you. There's different ways of feeding.
Do they know they're feeding?
Not always. Some of them are yet not conscious that they're feeding. Or that they're taking in your energy like that. But if that person is awake and aware, they know that every time they keep coming in contact with all these different people and they keep draining them and they don't want to hang around them anymore, that might be a clue that you have something going on with your energy levels or the energy levels of others. There are other types of hybrids that have different. Some are part blood vampires and some are part psychic vampires. And when I say psychic vampires, like I was saying, you feed off the life force of the person. So when I started to figure out about my vampirism, I first thought I was a psychic vampire. I was drawn to people. I wouldn't say I drained people because I didn't. So that really confused me. As I started to kind of look into what I do as a symbiotic psychic vampire, I feed off your negative emotions. So the negative emotions that you carry around with you, everybody has them all day long. I feed off those. I take that negative energy away from you. And when I extract those negative ions, that gives your body's energy a chance to build its life force back up with positive ions. Does that make sense?
Yes, because I think I've experienced that in your presence. Now, is that something that you deliberately do, or do you just do it automatically?
I do it automatically. It's called ambient feeding. It's something that I can turn it off. I've learned how to turn it off and shield myself and ground myself. But that's taken a lot of work to learn to do that. So I can do it. But I don't usually do it because I need to keep my own health and my own well-being up. So ambient feeding is where I can be in your presence or in a group of people or anything like that where there's excitement or emotions going on, and then I can feed off that energy.
Okay. I thought you were done. Please.
So then the next part would be the next type of feeding that someone could do is it's a direct feeding. That's where, like, if I'm putting my hand on you and touching you in certain spots, I'm actually feeding from that spot of where I'm physically touching you at, where our elbows are meeting or anything like that. Then there is what we call deep feeding. And deep feeding is where I'm literally using my breath and my intention to go deep into your soul and extract energy out. Now, mind you, psychic vampires do the same type of energy work. They do ambient, direct, and that type of deep feeding, except for I'm not feeding off your life force. I'm feeding off your negative energy that you have within your soul.
That definitely seems a lot more ethical and moral than just saying, hey, you know, I'm going to touch this person for a minute and I'm going to suck out their life force. That's definitely one that I can get behind a little bit more.
But you give back the positive energy, right? You
transform
that energy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why I put the symbiotic that's the part of the symbiotic psychic vampires that they're giving that back. Most psychic vampires are taking. They're not giving anything back to you when they extract your life force from you. They're physically feeding off you so that way they can stay healthy and alive and keep moving. Their energy level up.
That just seems really, pardon me, but douchey to me.
If they have to feed, then where else would they get the energy?
Well, as long as they're doing it ethically, they can say to you that they're a psychic vampire if they know they are. And most people, I would say probably most people now that really know they're a psychic vampire, they're aware that they are feeding and they're conscious of that. And I mean, there's a lot of them out there, and most times if they know it, they're pretty ethical. But yeah. You're going to meet some that aren't, that maybe aren't even awake yet and know that they're a psychic vampire, or that, you know, or an energy worker of that type even. I mean, I think psychic vampire was created to make sense to people who need other people's life force to feel fulfilled in their life force. And it's all energy exchange to me. It's all about your energy and how you're going to exchange it with others to help yourself feel good and they feel good or not feel good, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, it does make sense. I personally, with me, if I was a psychic vampire, I would be a little bit more in your camp, Micah, because I just, I don't know, it just seems like, you know, we're just stealing from somebody else. I don't like that idea, and it kind of hurts my soul a little bit to think that there are people out there that are, you know, that are going to victimize you.
Wait a minute though. Who says that giving isn't a gift?
No, what I'm saying is, it's like people who just take it from you, just like you know, like you see in the movies with vampires. They just, you know, like you get the kind that you come up and just sink their teeth in and take whatever the hell they feel like. I mean, with those kind of things, that just seems bad to me. But unlike you're different with that. You take the negative energy away and then give back the positive, and that I dig about you. But you
she
know,
has
just,
a positive exhaust pipe.
Exactly.
Sometimes too much for people.
Yeah.
I've had plenty say to me, "Can't you not be positive for a minute?" I mean, really?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, you say that now, but you haven't had me in your space where you're finally tired of that.
No, but I mean, but you do get what I'm trying to say, though. Exactly. I mean, it just, you get there's so many victimizers in the world that it's like, it's just, I don't know, it kind of hurts my brain and my soul a little bit to think about it. But we do have a question from chat, and it's from Teresa. And she asks, are there people who repel the idea of taking energy from other people? She further says, I try to repel other people's energy for my own sake.
Are there people out there that repel energy from other people? You mean, is it possible?
Yeah. Yeah. The people who block the energy as opposed to taking it in, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, it's possible to be able to do that. You do that through filters and shields. Empaths really need to be able to do that when they're shielding themselves from other people's emotions. And so everybody has the ability to be able to create filters and shields. And yes, there are people who will just go around blocked. I mean, some people naturally have a very strong north pole to them. They're polarized to the deep north, and so they may automatically kind of be that personality anyway to be constantly shielded. So I think the answer would be yes for that.
Okay. So I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good because we're interviewing you. So, I just realized it was a really stupid thing to say, but you know. So the vampire, the energy vampire, is it a choice? Is it you're born that way? Is it in your DNA? Where does that come from?
For me, I was born this way. I mean, it wasn't a choice. It was something I had to learn how to deal with, to be able to function in normal society, to not be a strange outcast. I mean, for me, I feel that it wasn't a choice. I think it can be learned. I think energy work can be learned by anybody. And again, I'll talk about labels. If you want to accept the fact and say that I'm a psychic vampire and you read about it and you learn about it and you study it and you go to the houses that practice it, I believe you can learn it. Because to me, it's all about energy work and how you take energy in. and to move your spirit work forward. So,
okay.
Yeah. I do, but I do think it is, for some people, you're going to kind of be born, you're born with it. It's part of whatever the lesson work. For me, it's the lesson work. I believe that in
so
a past.
It's like karma.
It's karma, yeah. In a past life, I did some not so nice things. And so this lifetime, I'm happening to really do double good things to make up for those last lifetimes. I mean, that's kind of how I think of it, but it would depend on anybody.
Okay. We have another question from chat, and I mean, it's a really good one. It's from Cosmic Kids. How about boundaries and permissions first? And can you pull from natural sources like water and nature rather than people?
Good question.
Great question. So as for the elements, yes, you can. You can pull from that energy. Now, I can't pull from that energy so much. I'm able to, but it's more challenging for me as a symbiotic psychic vampire because, mind you, I'm looking for focusing on negative emotions. So for me, it would be challenging to do that. But for a psychic vampire, yes, they would be able to pull from the natural forces like a waterfall or, I mean, whatever it is that they are able to get that, their energy vibration, where the energy vibration is up for them. Standing in one of those places in the Sedona, Arizona, where the earth is vibrating would be a place I can imagine.
Mm.
So you definitely could get from outside sources. And then what was the first part of that
question? Boundaries and permission.
Got it. So for me, I'm a very ethical and very humble person, period. So I think you have to learn your ethics on what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. Now, I would never deep feed on anybody without their permission. It's too intimate. If you're too close to that person and getting into their spirit. And so that would require some kind of permission between me and that person that's receiving that treatment, if I needed to deep feed from them for whatever the purpose is. So are there and boundaries? I mean, I believe that there should be boundaries, but trust me, there are plenty of people out there that don't have boundaries.
Sure.
And filters. And so it's just knowing that as a conscious person that's not a vampire, of knowing when there's somebody around that may be draining your energy because you know what your energy level normally is.
Is there anybody's energy where you just kind of go, ooh, I don't want that? Like somebody who's like a really bad dude, like Charles Manson or something like that? Or is all energy pretty much energy?
So for me, being a symbiotic psychic vampire, one of the things that happens when I feed off the environment, I can literally kind of taste it in the back of my mouth. I talk about that on my website underneath the symbiotic psychic vampire piece. I literally can taste it. So sometimes for me, it might be really nasty tasting, but or, you know, like Charles Manson. See, now I would be attracted to want to go and talk to him because of the darkness that he does hold. And I would want to get in there and feel it and touch it. But that's just me because of where I'm at. The I worked on psych wards for years, long before I really understood the vampirism piece of me. And then it came to mind as to why I worked that kind of work, because it was helping me feed ambiently, and I was being able to get their negative thoughts and emotions and all that kind of stuff and be able to give them the positive part of what I was able to give out. So that was a very symbiotic, therapeutic type of relationship I would have. And so for me, I would want to do that. Now, is there other vampires that wouldn't want to get around it? Maybe so. Psychic vampires that wouldn't want your energy because it may come with a lot of extra emotional drama that you don't really want to be involved with, because there's a huge difference between your life force and we all know about these people that are very emotionally draining. You know, it's woes and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mom's like that.
So are they psychic vampires or are they just needy?
No, I think they have a, my personal belief is that they have an emotional imbalance within their soul, and that emotional balance needs to be worked on. Or they've brought something in with them from past life emotional work that they've been reluctant to really work on to help them get to their next level of spirituality, if that makes sense, kind of. Anyway, very deep. But those people are different. They're just emotionally draining you. They're not physically draining your life force. Once you get away from that person and you feel okay after being away from them for a little bit, when you get fed from and your life force gets fed from, you literally feel exhausted. You feel like you need to take a nap. You feel nauseous and a headache, and things seem to be, you might be dizzy or very uncomfortable in certain spots on your body. That's when that's being fed from off your life force. So that's the difference between the two, emotional and actual psychic vampire feeding.
Okay. Okay. All right. So Teresa says, I find that people come to me to tell me things that they will not tell anyone else. Maybe I have that energy, but when they do that, it takes my energy to process it. What do you call that?
So for Teresa, then I would definitely say, look at, you know, the symbiotic part of it, and maybe learning how to, because that's what happens to me. That's kind of what started me on this whole path, is that people would just come and give me information that they never would tell anybody. And then they'd stand there and say, I don't know why I just told you this, but I just felt like I needed to tell you. Well, for me, I knew why they were telling me, because their soul is talking at the same time to me. But learning to create really good filters and boundaries with the with those people, and kind of just a lot of times when we accept that we're going to always find people like that in our life that want to come and just give us all their baggage, accept their baggage and take it, because I can discard it easily because it's not my baggage, but they may not be able to discard that baggage on their own. If that makes sense, whether it be emotional baggage or spiritual baggage. Does all that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So it's I would say for her to definitely build filters, create boundaries for herself and what she'll accept and stand and listen to. And then if that's something that's going to happen to her all the time, it's a conscious thing that constantly occurs, then really look at who she might be in the world of that type of psychic vampire, symbiotic psychic vampire, and what is the energy exchange she's really going through while this exchange is happening.
Okay. Yeah, it's but what about people who are, you get like people who are really into, you know, drama. I mean, that is like their main focus in life is drama. I have people in my own personal life that are like that. Are they somehow feeding off of that drama to make themselves feel better? Or, you know, like say you're really into the Kardashians and the Kardashians really turn you on. Is that like, you know, feeding off of that drama? Is that the same thing as being like a psychic vampire?
I would say probably no. That would be my thing for that. That for me, that those people that are interested in that kind of information out there, the Kardashians, the get live TV or whatever it is nowadays.
Yeah.
To me, that's a level of soul work that you're working through. That person may be a very baby or young soul. There's different levels of soul work that we go through to get to the last level of soul work. And that person may be still working on a very young level of soul work. And that's why they find this type of lifestyle or the Kardashians entertaining. Some may just find it entertaining, but most of the time I believe it's that you're looking at their drama being more than your drama. And so it helps you ignore your drama and focus on somebody else's stuff. So you won't actually look at what you have going on because it's easier to be entertained by the other. It's kind of that's kind of like being a drone in a sense, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know with me, when I see that kind of stuff, it's like, I am so completely repelled by it. I can't understand how anybody could be into that, but that actually does answer a lot. However, you know, with somebody in my life who is like that, it's like, even when I'm around them, I feel that it's like, they're just sort of sucking the life out of me, and I just feel tired and exhausted, but that just could be because I don't tolerate their garbage.
Well, and you have boundaries, so that's a good thing. That's what you want to have. But then that also gives you a chance to work on building your shields and building your filters as to what you'll stand and listen to is the filter, and the shield as to when you'll say, stop, I don't want to talk about this anymore. And so that will help you even that would help him professionally, even by going out. And when you go out to do ghost hunting, you know, you have to build your filters and your shields. So that way that certain spirits can't get into your spirit. And that's a very similar thought process for you guys.
Okay. So for somebody who is new to building shelters and fields, great, now I'm doing it, filters and shields, or grounding and centering and all of that, is there some kind of imagery, or is there something that you can say that would help them understand how they do that?
Yeah, it's a process, and each person has to figure out their own process. So for me, what I do is I wear a talisman around my neck that I believe is my shield. It keeps everything away from me. It kind of works on the mental part of yourself to build that personal power or that will within you, so that way you won't take things on that other people may have said or done, or emotions that are rolling around. It kind of creates a shield over that part of you, and that's what I use. Some people do use words and incantations that build that shield up, and you might need to repeat that. So say I'm with somebody that's very emotionally draining and they're really kind of getting on my last nerve, but I want to stay with it with them so they can break through. Then what I might do is repeat a mantra in my mind that says something like, you know, that this person's information is not mine and I'm allowing it to pass through.
Okay.
It could be as simple as that. Whatever it is that resonates with you to help you keep that shield or filter. The thing about shields is shields will block everything out. So the person, somebody had asked before about you being able to block everything out. A shield will block everything, where a filter will allow certain things to continue to come through. And in a lot of situations, like especially paranormal things, you wouldn't want to necessarily put up a shield unless you knew that you were going into something really risky. You would want to create a filter so the energies could still be able to communicate with you.
So the vampire and the psychic energy, or the energy that you're talking about, is it something that you think, because I know we discussed it as part of karma, but is it something that also might be a theme throughout several lifetimes, or do you think it's kind of a one-off in one lifetime and maybe, you know, 20 more down the line again, you might have something?
No, I think it's a lifetimes kind of thing. I think it may be something that you... Oh, so if you really get in and study psychic vampirism, Michelle Bellinger wrote the Code of Ethics, or the Ethics Code for symbiotic psychic vampire, not symbiotic, but for the psychic vampires. And she has a house that she has in Cleveland, Ohio. Every year they do workshops there, and it's a weekend-long retreat. I went to it. It was pretty amazing to be around all the psychic vampires there and other kin that associate with that. So I do feel she talks about different castes, different types. There are three different types of psychic vampires that she says exist. There are priests, there are counselors and there are warriors. And each one of them has a different role in the world for processing the life force that we have all around the planet. So the priest is somebody who's not able to make their own life force, so they really need to do a lot of deep feeding and a lot of hands-on touching to keep that life force coming into them. And they are the higher level in psychic vampires. So I'm assuming the way I see the priest part is that they have probably been around many, many more lifetimes than maybe some of the others. But I don't have any proof to that. There's okay. the counselors. Okay. The counselors are ones who regenerate energy all the time. They take life force in and they put a lot of life force out. So counselors and priests work together very well. Then you have warriors, and a warrior is a person who is a very grounded spirit. They're kind of very grounded, and what they do is they feed off the lower energies that are out there, and they also help keep the priest and the counselor kind of grounded in their spiritual work if they're doing it in a kind of a house or a mass situation.
Okay.
And a lot of that stuff can be looked up on her. She has a very good website with lots and lots of information about psychic vampirism.
Okay, cool. It's Michelle Bellinger.
Michelle Bellinger, she's one of them. There's also quite a few other places. There's the psychicvampire.org. That is an excellent resource. A gentleman named Lono Vespertillo, I think that's how you say his name. I could have slaughtered it, but he also has a lot of stuff out there. So there is a whole vampirism research methods where they've researched and do statistical studies every year where you can, if you're a psychic vampire or a vampire, you can put your information in, and they have lots of tables and of different kinds of things that talk about vampires.
Okay. So we only have around 10 minutes left, and I've got a mess of questions for people. So we'll try to bang through as many as we can. If we don't get to your question, I'm very sorry, but I'm sure that Mishaela will come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Chad wants to know, what are tulpas? T-U-L-P-A-S? I don't know what that is. Apparently neither does Chad.
Neither do I. I don't know right off the top of my head.
She doesn't know. Okay, Rob wants to know, can you feel animal energies? Can you tell when a dog is mean or dangerous to approach, for instance?
I can, but I identify with an other kin. There's two parts to my spirit that are very strong, and that is crow and wolf. I tend to use those creatures or familiars at nighttime when I shift to do dream astral work. And so for me, yes, I can really tell. If a dog is growling at me, usually it's because I think they can sense that I have, you know, a different type of energy to me. And so they tend to want to, you know, guard themselves or anybody that they're with against me, in a sense, because I do think they can feel me too. But
okay. And then, I just lost the question. Okay. Hang on. So you were talking about how there are people who feed off of drama. So somebody wants to know, but I can't find the question now. What about people who are martyrs?
What about them? No. I mean, there are some out there that are martyrs. The sad thing is about a martyr is they don't even realize that they're a martyr. That's the sad part. That's the hardest person to work with. Spiritually, a martyr is the hardest person to work with because they feel their martyrism, or they don't even know that they're a martyr, number one. But I can see their martyrism as a huge part of over-controlling their environment and trying to avoid their issues and only focus on the issues of everybody else and everything else. So to me, that person honestly hardly has done a lot of really deep work. They may have done some work on themselves with a counselor or a spiritual person, but they haven't done the deepest part of the work yet.
Okay. All right. Hopefully nobody types anything or I'm going to lose a question while I'm reading it. Is it fact or fiction that Psyvamps have a feeding cycle with groups of select people? They used to say that they tap into your solar plexus. Oh my gosh, now I lost it. I knew that was going to happen. They used to say that they tap into your solar plexus during the feeding cycle. They pick weakened people who are perhaps sick. They are the non-ethical ones. There's a question in there somewhere.
The question was, do they exist? I'm guessing, but yes, there are groups of people that do that. I think a lot of times, and I'm not picking on caregivers or people who work directly with the ill, but a lot of times I believe that people who work with the ill can tend to sometimes possibly have a tendency to be a psychic vampire because they're doing that type of healing work that's actually feeding them and rewarding them as they do their job. But then also kind of there's mass amounts of that type of life force around in hospitals, in places where people convalesce. And I think people tend that aren't awake tend to go there because it is an easy way to feed because they're not feeding consciously.
Okay. Mm. All right.
That, hopefully that answered their question.
Yeah.
Yes, there are groups of people. That's like I said, be very careful about just hopping in and saying, yes, this is what I am, and I'm going to go with you guys to do whatever. You got to know what their intentions are before you just go into any group. You want to know what the intention is, what the expectation is, so that way you don't find yourself in a situation that is against your morals and ethics.
Thank you. So thank you to everybody in chat who's asked questions tonight. We've had great questions.
Thanks.
We're getting great feedback in chat. People want you to come back very soon. And I'll tell you, last week we had a guy who believes he has traveled to Mars and time traveled, and we didn't get the number of questions that we're getting for you tonight. So,
wow. Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. And I hope you'll come back soon. So if people are fired up and they want to learn more, you have some websites, you write in the magazine. So how can they find you?
They can find me on Silver Moon Medicine, medicine spelled M-E-D-I-C-Y-N, a little bit different, of course, .com. And there's a contact me tab, and on there is my email, my direct email. I have a lot of people email me. I have a Facebook account, both the silvermoonmedicine.com and my personal one that I talk to people on. So that's how you could reach me for starters.
And they can also read your monthly column. You write two columns for the magazine, right?
Two columns, correct. I write the herbs and crystals column, and I write about myth and lore. So
we didn't even get to that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's intense.
Well, Cheryl, get her scheduled back just as soon as humanly possible.
Yes, I hope so.
Yeah, because great feedback and great questions in chat. So thank you for that. So, Michaela, thank you so much. I'm really glad that we had you on. It's been too long coming. We needed to do it a long time ago.
Great. Well, it was a pleasure being on. I enjoyed it. A little nervous at first, but I've seemed to manage.
Oh, no, you did perfectly fine.
I love all the questions. I love all the questions people answered. They asked really great questions, and that's awesome.
We have amazing listeners. I will tell you, we do. We have great listeners and great people who read the magazine. And, you know, we don't cover enough of the metaphysical stuff. Just because we're working on it. Exactly. So this is clearly there's a real strong desire to cover the topic. So fantastic. Michaela, thank you so much. I know we'll talk soon.
Sure. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Karen.
Okay. Uh-huh. Good night.
Good night.
Night.
All right. Well, you guys in chat, you were fantastic tonight. I like that.
Yeah, there was a lot of really good energy there.
I like that very much. So next week we have a change in program. Is that right, Cheryl?
We do. Our guest had to reschedule, so we will not be talking to Sean Stone. Instead, we will be talking to our good friend, William Becker.
Oh, no, I'm going to miss William.
Oh, you're not going to be here next week.
No, my college college, my alma mater is coming to play a concert at my son's high school, and he's also going to be playing in the concert. So,
well,
you know.
Here's the thing. William was supposed to do a show with us in June, so, you know, I'm sure he would come back soon.
I'm sure. And I talk to William all the time, so.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's great. Other people can talk to him. I'll just let him know that I won't be here. He'll be just fine. But then, you know, we can also get Michaela scheduled back very, very soon.
Yeah, and I'm going to email Michaela right after we get off the line here. But if anybody doesn't know William, he's actually a psychic medium, and he is a tour guide as well for... he does the Downtown Oregon City Walk with a Spirits Tour, and I think he's done that for more than 3 years. And so he's been a guest before. If you haven't heard him, I mean, you'll definitely want to listen.
He's a lovely person.
Yeah,
he's
and if you great. Have, you'll
now,
be coming
not
back.
Not to take away from our guest tonight, who is fantastic, or yes. Our guest next week, who is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks, Karen.
2 weeks.
Raymond A. Moody will be joining us on May 16th.
Raymond Moody! I have been waiting for this for what seems like ages.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Oh,
I'm so excited to talk to Raymond Moody on the 16th. I hope that you guys will all sign in and listen to that one because, man, am I going to have some questions.
Yes, we'll be talking about life after death and near-death experiences and maybe lives between lives and who knows what else.
And the psychomantium and reincarnation. Yeah. The guy has researched all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Very good. And... any idea when the May issue is coming out? Do we
yes,
know yet?
Yes, please. Check our website, paranormalunderground.net, on Sunday, May 5th. I believe it should go online then. If you're a digital subscriber, you will get it automatically in your email. If you are not, you can always purchase a single issue for $1.99. Mm-hmm. And we have a great lineup, and we don't really have time to cover it now. But we do have a cover story on Alexandra and Hans Holzer, courtesy Yay. Of our very own Rick Hale.
Very cool. So yeah, Rick got to talk to Alexandra Holzer, one of his bucket list, and I get to talk to one of my bucket list mm-hmm. in 2 weeks. Yay. Okay, anyway. Yay. I'm done being a giddy school girl now, I promise. You know, it'll be... I'm never nervous to do the show. I'll probably be quaking in my boots. Like I say, Rick will have to take over the whole interview because my whole... Everything I'll say is, Raymond Moody, hi.
Hi. You know what?
Hi.
You're going to do just fine, and it'll be all you. So I'm just going to sit back, and I'll probably pop in every once in a while and, you know, if I have any questions.
Oh my gosh, I know, I just reread his autobiography, so I'm ready. Right. Okay, so that's about it. Come back next week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, other times in the flyover state. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network. Good night.
Night. Night, everyone.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next time, keep exploring the unexplained at paranormalunderground.net. Please join us next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network.